All right, y'all, it's magic time. How's everybody doing? Yeah? Good? Here at the end of a very long, long week. I know it's probably, y'all have got to be exhausted. I know that I am exhausted. Thank you so much for coming around all the way to the very end and so early in the morning. I'm going to try and make this as fun as possible, as entertaining as possible. First, a quick note. I do know that when I get up on stage, I sometimes start to talk fast. So if I start to, yammer on too much, raise a hand, just tell me to slow down, or catch it on video, play it back at half speed, and it should be good that way. All right, cool. So before we begin, a word about pirates. Didn't expect to hear about Pirates Day, but here's what we're going to do. We're gonna play a little game. I'm going to ask you guys a few questions. And rather than do the normal raise your hand to say yes, I want everyone to give me a hearty yarr, right? Can you do that? Give me everyone together just to practice. Yarr, yeah. I want the people in the next rooms to hear it. One more time. Yarr. All right, cool. So, first question. How many of you use, web technology as part of your regular day-to-day job? Yarr. All right. How many of you are targeting iOS or Android as part of your day-to-day job, or maybe have a need to kind of in the near future? Arr. The guards will be around to collect you, escort you from the building. Traitors. But no, seriously, we care an awful lot about iOS and Android development. And we want you to care about it as well. It's just as important as the Windows ecosystem. There are so many devices out there in the world that are iOS and Android based. It's just something that we cannot ignore in our day-to-day jobs. So today, I'm here to talk to you a little bit about how you can use kind of Visual Studio and the Microsoft ecosystem to build apps that deploy to iOS, Android, and Windows using a shared code base. All right, so as we go along, anytime that there's a question, I want to hear a hearty yarr. All right? Cool. So, why do we care about this? Why is this important? Especially for those of you that answered with a hearty yarr to the, do you use web technologies? Well, apps are absolutely insanely popular. This is not a secret in any way, fashion, or form. But it's really kind of sobering to see how popular they are. Between 2013 and 2014, the amount of time that people spend on their devices in apps has gone from 20% to 14%. The amount of time that you're actually in the browser, it's evaporating under our feet. So for those of us who deal with web technologies on a day-to-day basis, it's absolutely critical for us to figure out how we adapt to this new world where content and tasks and to-dos are all accomplished via apps and not via the web. I'm not making a claim here that the browser is going away, but I am making a claim that kind of the way that people choose to consume web technologies is moving from a browser-based scenario into kind of an app-based scenario. So what do you get by moving from the browser and into a packaged app container? Now, if you kind of go to the far lower left-hand side of that guy, right, on the web app side of things, all right, we all know what a website can do. We don't need anyone to tell us about that. Up in the top right, a native app where you've got access to the file system and the camera and the accelerometer and geolocation, and you've got brilliant immersive graphics using your super-duper C++ object-oriented code. There's a lot you can do up there. But those languages for each of the ecosystems, using Objective-C, using Java, even using C# if you're not familiar with it, it's hard. And if you want to take the same app and deliver it to all of the ecosystems, there aren't a whole lot of options for you. Hybrid apps provide a wonderful middle ground. If you are interested in reappropriating your skills as a web developer towards native application development or packaged app development, you still get access to native device capabilities, you still get access to offline scenarios, you gain access to monetization opportunities through the app stores, and you improve the discoverability of your content by virtue of the fact that it's, you know, there on a little icon on your home screen every time you flip open your phone. So there's a huge number of benefits to actually going and taking your content and moving it from the web to a native package container. So one of the ways that this happens, the most popular framework out there to make this possible is this thing called Apache Cordova. All right. So Apache Cordova was originally developed by the Natobi Corporation back in 2009. In 2011, it was sold to Adobe as PhoneGap. When it was sold to Adobe, it was open sourced under the name Apache Cordova. So it's kind of a confusing history, but if you hear PhoneGap and Cordova, chances are people are probably talking about the exact same thing. The major difference is that the Adobe PhoneGap solution provides a cloud build service, and that's what most people are talking about these days when they talk about PhoneGap. They're talking about Adobe's cloud build services. Let's talk a little bit about the actual kind of architecture of it. So the way this basically works is that your application lives right up there in that green square. It's all inside of a web view, and so your application, it's purely a JavaScript app. A SPA or single page application is kind of the most typical pattern adopted by developers. And inside of that web view, you are given access to native device capabilities through these things called plugins. So Apache Cordova plugins essentially provide a bridge between your web view and the native app container so that you can use the exact same JavaScript API, I'll say navigator.camera, to access the camera, whether you're on an iOS device, an Android device, a Windows device, heck, even a BlackBerry device, if that's your thing. All right? So the top 20 or so plugins, Microsoft and our product team actually vets. We have a test team that goes out. We make sure that all those top 20 plugins that provide access to the most common device capabilities, and we'll see a range of those here in a minute, that those all work, and they work for all of the platforms advertised. Beyond that, there is a huge ecosystem of what are called custom plugins. Custom plugins can be developed by your enterprise, can be developed by an agency somewhere around the world, and they usually take one of the base plugins and customize it to add additional functionality. So let me give you an example of that. The camera plugin, that's kind of one of the top 20 core plugins. And what if you wanted to take that and you wanted to make it into a barcode scanner? This is a pretty common thing that you see in apps these days, maybe like an Amazon app or something like that, where you actually hold your camera up to the barcode and it reports back to you on what product that is, maybe what some prices are, what its SKU or bin number is. Well, there's a custom plugin for the barcode scanner that turns the camera and adds on a little bit of extra functionality to provide barcode scanning capabilities. In terms of momentum, like how much is this actually being used? So we did a little analysis of apps that are out there in the marketplace. And for this, we took a look at top 1,000 apps in the Android store, or the Google Play store, excuse me, and the Windows store. And we found that about 6% of consumer applications are built using Apache Cordova, and about 13% of enterprise apps are built using Apache Cordova. Now, I realize those are, 6 and 13, those aren't giant percentages, but when you take a look at the actual number of applications that are out there in the world, that's a huge number. I also saw a recent number from, I believe it was Gartner, if I'm not mistaken, that said within the next year, 50% of applications in stores will make use of a web view of some kind in order to deliver content to customers and apps. So 50% of applications out there are using, if not Apache Cordova, some variant of this kind of web view-based package container. That's a lot of momentum and a good reason for us to kind of think about it as developers. So why are folks choosing Apache Cordova over, let's say, Xamarin? I'm sure anyone else here see talk on Xamarin today? That was pitiful. All right, we got a couple in the house. All right, well, so reason number one, biggest reason here, 72% taller than me. It's because they know JavaScript, because they know HTML, because they know CSS. So anytime someone comes to me asking, should I use Cordova over Xamarin? Should I use Xamarin over Cordova? my short answer and like the answer you should, the question you should ask yourself is, what's my language of choice? Where am I most comfortable? If you're most comfortable in JavaScript and in web technologies, go Cordova. If you're most comfortable in C#, go Xamarin. It's just a matter of where you can be fastest and most productive. All right. Just to kind of drive home the point on this, if you kind of look at this, and hopefully this is legible for a lot of you, you look at kind of why people are choosing these technologies. So the green is like their first reason for choosing, the orange is their second reason for choosing it, and the dark blue is their third reason for choosing it. The number one reason for choosing HTML or Cordova-type technologies is because of speed and cost of development. The fact of the matter is that A, web developers who are proficient developers are fast at it. There's a huge community, a huge ecosystem of open source frameworks and libraries that you can leverage to do work quickly. And I've actually talked to a couple of people at the conference this year who took up Apache Cordova as their prototyping tool before they went on to create an actual kind of native application using kind of the native build systems and the native languages like Objective-C and Java and C#. Because Cordova is so quick to actually kind of prototype workflows. And you can take that and you can productize it real easily to turn it into a real application that you deliver. Interestingly enough, iOS, I love this. iOS, revenue potential's on top. Okay, that's cool. There's a lot of people that have iPhones. But speed and cost of development are at the very bottom. So clearly, if you want to get there quickly, that's not the way to go. Are you swayed by my facts and figures? One guy swayed. Okay, that's all right. We'll try to sway you with actual code. So let's talk a little bit about the tooling that's available in Visual Studio before we dive into the code. So the tooling for Visual Studio is in preview right now. It's available in Visual Studio 2013. It does require the latest update. We intend for it to reach RTM, let's call it in the spring-ish, right? And so if you want to try it today, you just kind of go to the Visual Studio website, download the extension, and install it. It is optimized for local build, unlike PhoneGap, for those of you that may have been looking at PhoneGap, which means that you do need to have the kind of the native build systems available locally. That means that you need to have the Android SDK installed. That means that you need to have the Windows SDK installed. I assume that most of you do. And that means that you also need to have a Mac on-premise. You may not be able to see it, but I'm using a MacBook Pro running Parallels today. So that happens to be a pretty handy kind of dev box for me because I'm able to switch really easily between the Mac system and the Windows side of the things. Now that sounds like a lot of stuff to install, and it is. And so we want to make your job easier. When you install the extension, we do all the work of downloading all these different parts for you. We'll download and install and configure the Android SDK and Apache Ant and Git and Chrome and Node and the dozen or so different toolchain dependencies that are necessary for you to do development. Based upon interviews and people we've talked to, for a typical developer, even one who's familiar with Cordova development, this can sometimes take 1 to 2 days to do. So it's a huge time saver that you're able to kind of get all this in one quick download. That does mean that it takes a little while to install, though, you know, maybe an hour or so. It's an integrated development environment, like you all know. You all love Visual Studio. But the most important thing here is that unlike any other product that I know of out there, Visual Studio enables you to debug against any target. You want to debug against Windows? Sure, we got that. Android? Yeah. iOS? Yeah, you can do that. You can do it against a simulator, a tethered device. You can do it up against a Ripple, which is like kind of the web browser. Anywhere that you want to debug, you can do it from within Visual Studio. We'll actually do some of that today. I've got a little asterisk here. There's a good reason for that. It's because iOS debugging is available only in the next release. So you're going to have to wait not too long, very near future. Very, very near future. All right. So enough of that. This is all my slideware for the day. Let's actually build some stuff. So what are we going to build? Argyle. All right. So this app is an agile planning app for pirates. It's a flimsy excuse for demoing some features, but we're going to have some fun with it. All right. Let's get our machine started up here. Cool. Switch on over. Excellent. All right, cool. All right, so I apologize. I'm going to be hunched over behind some monitors here for the rest of this. This desk is lower than I am, and so to type, I've got to bend over. But you won't miss my pretty face too much, I promise. All right, so what have we got here? I've just got a file, new project, with multi-device hybrid apps. It's our really long name for Tools for Apache Cordova. If you can think of a longer name, we're looking for one. Please write the product team. And so we're just going to start. We've already got a file new here. And so for this particular app, I said this was an agile planning app, and we need a data source. All good applications need a data source. So in this particular case, I'm going to be using the Office 365 APIs that just released a couple of days ago, really. If you're interested in learning about them, let's see here. There's a nice little blog post here in the Office blog. Just search for Office 365 JavaScript API, and you'll find it. Super easy to install, only took me like 2 minutes. And that's going to give me this extra special little thing here where I'm going to be able to say add connected service, and it's going to give me the option to add kind of an Office 365 bit of scaffolding here. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. To do that, I've got to register my app with Office 365. Hold on. There's going to be a lot of authenticating in this this demo. And as soon as I have authenticated, it's going to give me an option to kind of connect to different types of services. I can make use of contacts or the calendar or SharePoint files or mail, any of that kind of stuff. In this particular case, we're going to take access to the calendar, which we want read and write access to. And we're going to take access to the contacts, which we're only going to take read access to. That provides kind of an extra layer of security there, just in case someone gets gets a hold of my credentials and I want to lock it down so that they can do as little damage as possible. That's how we do it. Okay, so now I've said that, I'm good. And I want you to keep your eye, after I say okay here, keep your eye over here on the Solution Explorer. What that's going to do is it's going to start bringing down assets from the cloud, and it's kind of just bringing down all of the packages and the JavaScript frameworks that I need in order to access the Office 365 API. Here they are. They just showed up in the service, this new services directory, and this is really how we organize all of our new services, whether it's Office 365 or Azure. All of them go underneath this directory, so we have easy access to our basic Microsoft services. And of course, it brings up some nice documentation for me. You're not going to need that today, or at least I'm not going to need that today, so we'll close it out. And I'm going to bring up my index page. Now, from here on out, pretty much everything that you see should feel like stupidly familiar if you're a web developer of any kind. It's plain old simple JavaScript and HTML. And in this particular case, because we just added in those APIs, I actually need to reference them. So that's exactly what I'm going to do here. I'm just going to reference services, Office 365, oops, services, Office 365, scripts, and the loader, right? And that loader is just going to suck in all of the appropriate JavaScript for my Office 365 API. Excellent. All right, cool. So we've got that in there. And is there anything else we need to do here? No, that's probably about it. Let's go grab real quickly from our demo. We've got a couple of pre-canned steps for ourselves here. And what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to grab a couple of buttons here. And all this is doing is these are a couple of just like quick and easy buttons for me to test that my API is actually working, right? And I actually want to be able to consume those. So I've got the major work of my app right here in this thing called office365.js. This is a bit of pre-canned JavaScript that I created. And just to give you an idea of what's actually going on here, there's no kind of nothing up the sleeve, no particular magic here. What these are really doing is each of these is creating a promise. That's how all of the Office 365 APIs work. My first one that I'm going to call is just to log in, and that's going to authenticate and give me a token that I can use everywhere else. After that, some things like, oh, I'll use get events as an example. Same kind of thing. We're going to use that token that we created up here. We're going to call getEvents.fetch, which is invoking the promise. That promise will then return back a collection of events. And in this particular case, I'm not doing anything special with it. So let's do this. We're going to run this guy. And I'm going to run it on my local machine, because why not? It's always good to see things working on Windows first. So as I'm doing this, you'll see down here in the output, it's going through a build process here. And let me talk a little bit about what's happening behind the scenes with this build process. All right, it's kind of bootstrapping up. The first time that you build a project, we're actually going out and via Node, we're pulling down the latest version of Cordova. The product team, just as I said that we test all of the plugins, so too do we test all the different versions of Cordova. Cordova and Android and iOS, they obviously don't release at the same pace or along the same cadence that Visual Studio does. So we are constantly releasing updates, and we are constantly kind of giving our customers the option that, hey, if you want to adopt a new version of Cordova, you can. If you want to stay on the same version, you can, but you can at least upgrade in confidence knowing that a product team is vetted to make sure that kind of future versions are compatible with the entire ecosystem, with all three of the major ecosystems being iOS, Android, and Windows. Okay, cool. So we've got our little buttons up here, and actually, you know what I'm gonna do? Let's see here, we'll go ahead and log in, and when I log in, it's gonna say, hey, you need to authenticate here. So we're gonna do that again, Cordova. Demo.onmicrosoft.com. So the reason that we need to authenticate here after having already authenticated back in Visual Studio is because this is an instance of the application, right? It's got its own kind of set of security protocols, its own sandbox here. And as soon as I authenticate, remember how I said before, hey, I'd like access to the calendar, I'd like access to contacts. All applications require a contract, right, between the installed device and the application itself. And so just as whenever you install Facebook, it says, I want access to your photos and your contacts and your life and your kids and your all of that, right? So too do we have to give permission to have access to our information here. So I'm going to say, okay, that's cool. You can have access to my contacts. You can have access to my calendar. And in this particular case, I'm going to move this over here. I'll go to my desktop. Yoink. Come on, desktop. Here we are. Cool. So you'll see here that I've got the application just snapped over on the right-hand side, and now I've got the debugger attached on the left-hand side in Visual Studio. And so just to show you what's going on here, I'm actually going to set a breakpoint. I'm going to set a breakpoint on getEvents inside of this promise, and then I'm going to evoke getEvents. Give the Wi-Fi a moment to kind of do its thing. Okay, great. I just hit my breakpoint. And you can see here that this returned back, oh, it's so tiny, an array of the contacts in my Office 365 account. And so just so you guys kind of, you know, you can match this up against reality, I literally just 2 days ago set up an Office 365 trial account. So actually, here's my trial account of Office 365. Here's my people. And there we are. There's my contacts. Jane Doe, John Doe, my team is a group, and William Brown. Just kind of put in some dummy data there to prove that, hey, we're actually kind of getting data back from a reliable source. All right, cool. So many windows open. Cool. All right. So far, does everything make sense? Yar. Excellent. All right, cool. So. And by the way, guys, there's not that many of us in here. If anyone has questions, raise your hand. Don't hesitate to interrupt me. I don't mind repeating the question, and we'll kind of answer things as we go along. But I think it's pretty elementary so far, right? Cool. All right, so we've actually hit a breakpoint here. We know how that's working. Let's start to appify this, shall we? All right, so let's see here. We're going to add in a couple of frameworks here because everybody loves frameworks. In this particular case, I'm just going to grab like jQuery and this other thing called date.js, which I found out earlier this week hadn't been updated since 2008, but it still is awesome. So let's actually grab these guys here. We're going to drag them over to our scripts directory, put them in there. That means that we also need to reference them back in index.html. You guys are going to watch me do a lot of copy and paste here. So jQuery, date.js, and app.js. Cool. Let's change the order of that. Great. And let's see here. What else do we need to do here? We're going to add in a couple of divs. And basically here, we just want to display all of our calendar and our contact information on the page. So I'm going to provide a container for those guys. Contacts. And another one for div ID events. All right. Cool. We got that in there. And you know what? We're not going to use these buttons anymore. So I'm going to go ahead and get rid of the buttons. All of them except for one. I'm going to keep add event. Excellent. All right. So now, we've gone all this time without talking very much about the application lifecycle. We've really spent all of our time just dealing with Office 365 and with the HTML. And that's all fairly pedestrian stuff, as exciting as APIs are. But the app lifecycle is rather particular or peculiar to Cordova. So in a typical app, web app, you're going to bootstrap your app or kind of instantiate it, initialize it, whatever your word is, using the on-DOM ready or the DOM load event, right, or on-load event. In the case of an app, you have a slightly different life cycle. You've got on-device ready, which basically says, hey, I'm starting up, I'm ready to initialize. You have on pause, which is kind of the moral equivalent of suspending your app. Like when it goes into the background and kind of quietly shuts down, that's on pause. And then I bet you can all guess what on resume does. It's what happens when you bring it back. Give me yar. Yar. All right, sweet. So in this particular case, we need to initialize this guy. We're going to initialize it by doing a direct login here, right? We just want you to want it to log in as soon as we bring up the app. We don't want to wait for anything else. And when we log in, we actually want to come back over here. I can get rid of this side of the screen. Come back over here, and we're actually going to do a little thing here. So we want, as soon as we're done logging in, right? So I'm inside of the login function here, right? As soon as we've successfully logged in, that's what this is saying here, that I've successfully logged in, then we're going to go ahead and call get contacts and get events. Brilliant. All right. That get contacts and that get events are methods that are down here. They're part of the Office 365 API. As soon as we get the events, we also want to show events. I will show you where that method is defined in just a moment, but suffice it to say, it shows the events, right? You can kind of guess. And here, we're going to say session.events. So why am I saying session.events here? I'm saying session.events because I want to save this object for later. Every time that I need to refresh the events or want to bring them up in my app, I don't want to have to call the Office 365 API again. I want to be able to cache the data for offline use. I also might want to be able to store the data kind of in both in local storage and in the Azure and in the cloud via Azure or Zumo, something like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to save that to an object that we will later save to local storage. And up here is where I've defined that object, right? It's just a global variable that I'm using. I'm going to do the exact same thing for get contacts. I'm going to save that instead of to a local variable, I'm going to save it to a global variable. And I'm going to also say show contacts. Excellent. Cool. Let's see here. And I think I got everything that I need there. The last thing that we're going to do here, add event. So why are we going to use add event? So the basic idea behind this app is that you want to be able to see what your team members are doing. You want to be able to see their calendar. And you want to be able to do, I don't know, you want to be able to schedule Scrum really quickly, right? Scrum's important. You need to do it on a daily basis, and you need to do it quickly and keep it short. So we're going to kind of make the default that anytime you add an event, we're actually scheduling Scrum, which in Pirate is pronounced Scrum. All right? And we're going to do, let's see here, let's actually call var t equals first available. All first available does, I'll show you this method in just a second, but first available loops through all of the events and finds the first available time slot to schedule Scrum. It's just going to return back a time, and we can use that to say when the first available appointment is or first available meeting is. So
t.start, and the end time will be at t.end. Cool. Down here, we will make this 5-minute scrum, me hearties. Cool. And what, think
on the deck,
sound good? Yeah, on deck, cool. Great. And then finally, so now we've essentially, we've prepared our event object to be sent off to O365.
And now, once we send it off, we're going to have a new event, but our kind of events object will not have been updated. So we actually need to go back and get an updated list of events.
So let's do that. On success, get events. Luckily, because we already added the show events method to get events, it'll automatically update in the app when we do it. All right, cool. So I think we've got everything ready. Everything's going. Hopefully the demo gods will smile upon us. So it so happens that in the background here, I've got the Android emulator started up. Let's see here. Show, who here has actually worked with the Android emulator before? Yar, right? Yar. So those of you that haven't, you might be surprised at how slow it is. It's not the fastest thing in the world. So the emulator, it's great. You should use it when you don't have a device on hand. But if you don't have a, if you do have a device on hand, you probably want to go directly to the device, or find one of the faster emulators out there. This is the one that's included by default with the Android SDK. So let's actually launch that guy. Notice up here that in my kind of debug dropdown, I got a list of different platforms. And this one, I'm going to choose Android. We're going to keep it in debug. And then over here, we're going to say send it over to the Android emulator. All right. So while that guy is building up, we're going to sit here and watch, see how slow this really is. What else can I say about this guy? So in terms of deploy targets, we've seen to Windows. We're kind of waiting right now for the Android emulator to do its business. There is a, and you know, we've talked a little bit about tethered devices. There's another one, which is Ripple. Ripple is a emulator that runs inside of the Chrome browser. It is excellent for kind of mirroring or emulating iOS and Android, because surprise, surprise, it's based upon WebKit. So are they. It's not so good at emulating kind of Windows behavior. However, kind of given that the number of differences between IE and Chrome are really starting to evaporate in recent years, it's still a pretty good way to do it. Oh, here we are. Authenticate. Thank you for the reminder there. All right, it's going to do its thing here. Hopefully that goes, yep, there we go. Cool, and it brought it back, and it actually just kind of added it to the app there. Okay, this is not a really great app so far, but you can see, hey, we've got events showing up, and we've got some contacts showing up. I got lunch with Davy Jones and a very important meeting later on today. And let's actually, let's see here. Let's see if add event works. We're gonna try hitting add event. And there it is, it just scheduled Scrum. Brilliant, cool. So now we've got the basic scaffolding of a decent working framework. But we need to add UI to this. And for a lot of people that at least I've talked to, doing that UI layer is probably one of the more difficult things, right? Because everyone wants it to be fast and fluid. And even some folks want it to kind of look exactly like the Android native or the iOS native experience or the Windows native experience. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little kind of tour about what it means to actually design responsively for hybrid apps. And kind of along the way, maybe kind of find a couple of performance tips there to make your actual application kind of fast, fluid, and move kind of naturally. All right. So since we have a device on hand, I'm going to dismiss this Android emulator so we don't have to wait for it anymore. All right. So let's actually go and start to appify this guy. All right, we've already got this here. Let's start adding in a little bit of work here. So we got a header. We want our button to show up in there. What would an app be without a logo? Everybody needs a cool logo up at the top. And we're going to need a refresh button, of course, just in case it gets a little stale. So for this guy, and let's be good web citizens, and let's move that event handler out of onClick and into the actual JavaScript. All right, we're gonna need navigation. So let's add navigation in here real quick. Show events. This will be today. Show contacts. That's my team. And we're going to want this to be in like some form of pages here. So, page. Now, I'm writing all of this by hand. But for a lot of folks, doing it by hand, may be a little bit tedious, and you might want something that's a little bit more of like a kind of a natural assembly. There are a lot of frameworks out there that will help you with assembling your application from a list of kind of pre-made controls. Some of the more popular ones out there today are Ionic, which works very well with the Angular framework. There is Kendo UI, published by our friends over at Telerik. There's Ratchet, there's Famous, there's Backbone, there's just oodles and oodles of them. I recently kind of had an opportunity to compare WinJS up against Ionic. Ionic had kind of been my previous favorite as being both comprehensive in its support matrix and also snappy. If you guys have not taken a look at WinJS 3.0 with its cross-platform support for iOS, Android, and Windows, I highly recommend it. They're doing some fantastic things there, and I'm not just saying that as someone from Microsoft. I'm saying that as a web developer. Super, super snappy, responsive framework. Worth your look. Okay, cool. So we got these guys in there. What else do we need? Page. We said we were going to add in some event handlers, so let's do that. I'm just going to copy and paste these because who wants to watch paint dry? Scripts index.js. So these event handlers, all those elements that I just added in, all it's doing is associating some methods with those event handlers. So we've got one for add event, one for show events, which will kind of toggle my pages back and forth, show contacts, refresh, which will actually just call get events and get contacts, and then log in again. And we want to show the events page by default. Speaking of which, let's make sure that we are saying class equals active, because that's going to be the first page to display. Cool. All right, I think that we're ready to go here. So let's actually, for my next trick, we're going to start up. I've got a Nexus 7 here. And I am using a little app called MobaZen to screencast this my Nexus 7 over onto my desktop. So let's actually take this, and you know what else I'm going to do here? Might as well. I'm going to go ahead and cut and paste my CSS over here as well. Let's grab our CSS and our images, bring those over there. And don't you worry, we will actually walk through the CSS in just a minute. But for now, let's actually send this guy over to our device. All right. Well, that's building. Any questions? Pretty simple so far.
You said you needed a Mac. Why?
I said that I needed a Mac, but why? So, building for each of the platforms, iOS, Android, and Windows, requires the native build systems. So, to build for Windows, I need the Windows SDK. To build for Android, I need the Android SDK. And to build for iOS, I need Xcode.
In part, this is a technology thing, and in part, this is a licensing thing. Apple does not like it when other people build their apps. They want you to own one of their machines, and so we require a Mac to build. Any of the solutions that are out there today, whether it's local build or it's cloud build for a service like PhoneGap, does require a Mac somewhere in the equation. So that's kind of the basic underlying reason for it. Okay, cool. So while that was building, oh, I'm not connected. Hold on, we're gonna actually get connected to the internet over here. Wah wah. Wi-Fi. Demo Wi-Fi. All right, I'm going to hide this so you guys can't see the password. I don't want you inking in on my Wi-Fi over here, right? I am using Mobizen to screencast. Mobizen. It's very handy. All right, let's see if we're connected now. Sweet, okay, it looks like we're connected. All right, we're gonna try building one more time then. Oh, am I not connected? Offline. All right, this might be the time to call tech support for help. Does anyone know how to connect to Wi-Fi? Says authenticating. Obtaining IP address. The squirrels are running in there. Oh, now we are connected. I think I'm good. We're going to try this one more time. Go. Yay, I'm connected. Did that answer the question regarding the native build systems? Yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear that. Yes, exactly correct. I'm running Visual Studio inside of Parallels. This is the... Yeah. In fact, I'm going to do it here in just 5 minutes, as soon as this thing actually comes up. All right, cool. We've actually... brought it up here. All right, cool. Now we've actually kind of got a decent little app kind of going up here, right? So I've got here, just brought back my thing. All right, looks like we have one or two little bugs here, but those are pretty easy to fix. All right, I happen to know that I'm missing a div there, and I put the wrong class on here. So we'll put it back over here, save, refresh that guy. In fact, that guy should work now. In fact, you know what? Rather than build that to the device, which I will do again in a minute, but since you asked about it, let's build to iOS. Let's actually see what that looks like. So we're going to stop our build here. Cool, it's attached. By the way, that's all fixed up now. Yes, cool. All right, so we're going to stop this guy here, and let's actually take it over to Mac. So for this... This part's super important. So when you are building to Mac, you've got to have something on the Mac side listening to say, hey, I'm waiting for a build. I'm ready to accept that build, and I'm ready to actually kind of use Xcode to build it. For that, we've got this thing called VSMDA Remote. It's a remote build agent that runs off of Node.
So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to open up my terminal server. And let's see here. Can I zoom on this guy? View. Is there a zoom? Yeah, zoom. Woo. Well, that didn't zoom very well. Okay. Hopefully you can read that. It says VSMDA remote. And all it's doing now is it's starting up that remote build agent. So now, constantly in the background, Node is just listening for the build event, waiting for Visual Studio to say, I've got a build that's ready for you. So we're going to head back on over to Visual Studio. And then from within Visual Studio, and you only have to do this once, but I want to take you guys through the process. You go over here to Tools Options, and then there's an option here for multi-device hybrid apps. Hopefully that's relatively legible. You'll notice that I am listening to host godzilla.local. Yes, my machine name is Godzilla. And to port 3000. Now, you don't need to be in a Parallels type environment to do this. This, the Mac, it could be anywhere else on the network, or it could be anywhere on the internet. So long as it has an IP address, we can talk to it. And in the very near future, the next release coming imminently. Today, we do not have a secure connection to that Mac. In the next release, we will have a secure connection to that Mac. So it will then be totally safe to transport over the interwebs and outside of your own private network. Cool. So we've told it where to listen to for it. So now I'm going to come over here, say build to iOS. Instead of building to Ripple, I want to build to an iPhone. I want to build it to the iPhone simulator. We've just kicked off of our build. And let's point it over here. We're not going to zoom anymore. You can see here it's actually kind of starting to kind of receive the build. It's kind of going through, getting some of the bits. Magic is happening. Hamsters are running in their cage. Oh, here we go. It's coming up. And so here's our app as it would appear on iOS. Surprise, surprise, we have to authenticate. Oops. Demoed on Microsoft.com. You guys aren't getting away with that. Always trying to steal my password. Cool, so now that we've authenticated, it's going to ask us for permission. Yes, you can see my calendar, my contacts. And brilliant, here we are. It brings it up. Looks actually pretty gosh darn similar to what we already had over on the Android side of things, right? And I can pretty easily move back and forth between it. Okay, I could probably stand to do a little bit of work on my spacing, make sure that the anchors aren't touching each other quite as close, but you know, with a little bit of finesse, you could do something good with this. And that kind of the transition between the two, I don't know, that looks pretty much like a native device to me. Do you guys like my refresh button? It's rum, because rum is refreshing, right? Cool. All right, so we've appified it. We've given it a UI. Let's actually look at how we did some of this from a CSS perspective. And I don't want to go through every single style rule. That would be boring. But I do want to call out some of the special things that I did here to kind of both accommodate multiple different form factors, multiple different orientations, like portrait versus landscape, and also to hopefully improve the performance a little bit. So up here at the top, font family, the font stack. What I'm doing here, in order to give this a kind of a more native look and feel for each one of the platforms, is I'm using a font stack that goes all the way down from Android, which is the Roboto here, Android, then down through iOS, which uses Windows, which uses Sego UI and Sego, and then down into iOS, which makes use of Helvetica, Arial, and so on, right? If you know anything about how font stacks work, you know that it basically just kind of, if it doesn't find the font, it defaults back down to the next one. And this is a pretty safe ordering if you want to make sure that the kind of all the typography on the application looks appropriate for the kind of the device that your users are on. This right here
This call out MS touch action and touch action. So it so happens that in browsers, there is a slight delay in between the initial click and when an action is performed. That works great for mouse type of interactions where you would want an opportunity to double click, right? That's kind of given that space for the double click. But in a touch device where there is no such thing as double click, you don't want that 300 millisecond delay. And that's what kind of accrues to a lot of the feeling of web apps, you know, maybe feeling a little bit sluggish. It's not because the web view itself is necessarily non-performant. It's because developers haven't finally tuned their apps to touch interaction. And so what this is saying here is, hey, we want to use the manipulation API here instead of using kind of the normal browser API. And so as soon as they make contact with that, instantly send the event to the web view. Let's go a little bit further on down. Right here, another thing that's kind of a small difference between web browsers and using an app on your device. For accessibility reasons, a lot of browsers use outlining in order to indicate kind of the active tab element. Well, there is no tabbing per se in touch devices. And in fact, when you hit that button, you don't want a little outline to appear around the element. That doesn't feel very app-like. And so this little bit of code here is effectively to remove that outline. Scroll down a little bit further here. Flexbox. Say R if you're familiar with Flexbox. Yar, no one, really? All right, well, so Flexbox is essentially there to make it stupid simple for you to kind of adjust to different types of layouts. Flexbox is what we're using back over here, and we're gonna come over here to it, for our today in our team. As I rotate this guy, right, they automatically adjust in size. It's a little bit difficult to tell with those guys because they're just buttons. There's a lot of white space around them. But effectively, Flexbox allows you to adjust to any size of width or height and have the contents of each one of the cells automatically adjust to fill the entire space. And this is extremely helpful in mobile devices where you've got a lot of different sizes and shapes and orientations. It is akin to the grid, but unfortunately, for those of you that are familiar with a CSS grid, it is not supported by all platforms yet. That is to say, grid is not supported by all platforms yet. And so until such time as that's available, Flexbox is your best friend. All right, we got a couple more down here that I want to call your attention to. Media queries. Say yar if you're familiar with media queries. Yar, all right. Then we don't have to talk about this one too much, but media queries are super helpful. When you need to customize for a particular orientation or a particular layout or a particular size, media queries are the way to do it. They are the way to selectively say, I only want these style rules to apply to this particular condition. You can do it by applying it to orientation, to device minimum width, maximum width, precise width, precise height, color depth, all sorts of different things. Media queries are your best friend for responsive design. Cool. All right. So that's kind of our good tour of that. But there's one last thing that we haven't talked about. I spent a huge amount of time in the first part of this talk talking about getting access to native device capabilities. And we haven't used any native device capabilities. So let's do that. In this case, I got a full day ahead of me, right here. So it's like, you know, I've got Scrum and I got bug triage and got lunch with Davy Jones. It would be super handy if I like working in an agile office where we can kind of change the whole schedule lickety split. I just want to clear out my entire calendar for the day so I can code. I mean, who doesn't want to clear out their calendar so they can code? It's awesome, right? Yar, right? Yar. All right, so let's do that. Let's clear out our calendar so we can code. In fact, the way we're going to do that is we're going to use ye olde accelerometer, right? So I've got a little bit of code that I'm going to add here. I'll walk you through it in just a second. I've just added shake.js to my application, and I'm going to go to index.html, and I got a reference shake.js. Doesn't work if you don't reference it.
shake.js. There we go. Cool. And let's take a look at shake.js.
All right. A super little easy piece of code, but it does a lot of cool stuff. So here's the basic idea. All right, I'm setting a couple of global variables because I want to be able to track the x, the y, and the z axis. A shake is essentially a large differential between moment A and moment B in kind of all of your different axes, right? So we're going to be comparing this x2 up against an x1 down here, right? The important stuff that I really want you to pay attention to is right here. So number one, we're going to go ahead and add this event to the device ready because we want it to be listening all the time. All right? Once we've added it to there, it's accruing against all the other device ready events, or event handlers more precisely. This is the piece that I want you to pay attention to. So this navigator.accelerometer.watchacceleration. So number one, that is a Cordova plugin that we are accessing right now. Most of the Cordova plugins adopt a similar type of syntax. Navigator.camera, navigator.accelerometer. There are others, and they're all super well documented, easily found. Let's actually kind of go back over here and find it. Yeah, here I've actually brought up the accelerometer documentation from apache.cordova.com. And all plugins operate as promises, right? So this is essentially an asynchronous call. That asynchronous call is starting in my web view. Cordova.js is bridging over into the native code. The native code, whether it's Objective-C or Java or C# or whatever it happens to be, is what's actually talking to the device, listening for the accelerometer values. It's then returning back an event handler, returning back a promise to my asynchronous call with the return value. And so in this particular case, what we're doing is every 100 milliseconds, we're making an asynchronous call. That asynchronous call returns back these x, y, and z coordinates, and that object right there, that move object. In this particular case, I happen to kind of think that 25 was the magic number for it feeling sufficiently like a shake and not like just a gentle movement. But your mileage may vary. You might want to adjust that. And then we're just going to say, hey, earthquake, whenever it shakes. But no, we don't want to just say earthquake. We actually want to use the Office 365 API and clear out our calendar. Anything else to say about that? Oh, one more thing to say about that. So navigator.accelerometer, those of you that are familiar with the W3C kind of web APIs, and say R if you're familiar with web APIs. Yar, one or two of you, okay. It's a tedious process to go through and read all of the APIs. I do not expect anyone in their right mind to do it as a pastime. But one thing that you may recognize if you are familiar with them is that navigator.accelerometer looks an awful lot like the future standard API for using the accelerometer and web applications. The job of Cordova is to put itself out of a job, right? Ultimately, all of these plugins that are used by Cordova should be on the path to standardization so that when the web API is adopted for each of these native device capabilities, the plugin can just step out of the way and you don't even need to change your code. Now, that's the hope and the dream. Does this actually work? Well, for the camera API, which is already kind of in adoption, it has worked. Will it work for future APIs? To be seen, but so long as kind of each of the contributors to Cordova are taking part in the web standards bodies, there's a pretty gosh darn good chance it will. And good news, the contributors to Cordova, Microsoft, Google, Adobe, Intel, these names should be familiar because they're the same people that are contributing to the web standards APIs. So we're all moving in the same direction, and that means that hopefully over time, we won't have to really even make use of plugins anymore. All right, cool. So we know how plugins work now. Let's do the Office 365 magic to get rid of that guy. For that, I'm just going to do a little copy and paste because it's kind of boring to show me this. So let's see here. We'll do it from here. Scripts. Oh, where did I grab that guy from?
Did I really not put my code where I could find it? Let's try here. No, I didn't put it there. I made so many different versions of this over the last couple of days. Oh, man. Did one of them have the delete code in it? The one before it? That one doesn't have shake. Let's try this one. The first one did? Not that one. let's see if we can find shake.js. Nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. Let's see here. Oh, well, you know what we'll do? Because I don't want to waste too much time, it's super simple. I'll show you guys later. Yeah. But let's see it working first, and we'll actually be able to see the console log earthquake, and that'll kind of give us the proof here. So let's send it to Android, since we can actually shake that guy. All right, cool. So there's all of our stuff here. Let's just watch the old console down here at the bottom. Now if I shake, oh, you know what I didn't do? Oh, okay, we're gonna get an error here. It may not even do it since I have, so I did not get to show off one thing there because I was so caught up in talking about plugins. And it's this piece right here. So we added the code to access the plugin, but we didn't actually tell the application, hey, I intend to use this particular device capability. And so to do that, you actually need to add the plugin to your app. I accessed the API, but I didn't actually add the plugin. So for that, we're going to head right on over here to plugins, and I'm going to do the check mark here for accelerometer, right? And that says, hey, we're actually going to use the accelerometer here. Cool. So now we've got the accelerometer here. We're referencing shake. We've got shake in here. It's calling an earthquake. We should be good now. Bring this guy up. All right, let's cross our fingers. Hopefully the demo gods will be good to us. Yeah, earthquake. Cool. Rawr! Victory. All right. And if everyone gives me your email address, I'll send you the delete code. All right, cool. So we're all the way through. We've got pretty much a working application here, minus the old delete. We can add an event. We can refresh. We got all the good stuff that we need. So, last little bit then here. Let's see. Let's take us to it. Yeah, here we go. Argyle. Do you guys notice there's like three puns happening here? Agile, Argyle, and pirates. It's awesome. All right. So, last thing that you need to do is publish this guy. So you got a bunch of different options for publishing. So if you are publishing to an enterprise, Windows Intune is a great option for you there. Via Windows Intune, you can manage kind of who gets your app, you can manage side loading, you can manage what versions the app is capable to be delivered to. If kind of enterprise privately manicured is not your thing and you want to make some money, any of the apps that are built via the VS Cordova tools will gladly be accepted into the Google Play Store, the Apple iTunes Store, the Windows Store, any of that good kind of stuff. It so happens that Cordova apps are one of, I think it's the only app that according to Apple's, terms and conditions, are allowed to update content inside of the app
without resubmitting to the store. It uses this cool feature called hydration, which is an entirely different kind of two-hour event for us to talk about. But the basic idea is that since you're living inside of a web view and that web view can query the server, it can go out, download HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, cache it locally, and then you can reuse that HTML, CSS, and JavaScript as your application. And that allows you to update content without actually having to resubmit a new package. Very cool stuff. We're kind of here about at the end. You guys have seen kind of hopefully some good stuff today. You saw us debugging against iOS and Android and Windows. You saw us using, we actually never got to the browser, but we talked about the Ripple browser. We used an emulator on both Android and for iOS, and we used a tethered device. In this case, we used a Nexus 7. We took a little tour of the Office 365 APIs and plugins and took a quick look at publishing. There's lots of related content here, but we've got about 7 minutes left. I did want to leave just a little bit of time for questions at the end. Hopefully you guys can speak up, jump up, do your best pirate impersonation, and let's have a conversation. Yes, sir. Yeah. So James and Jason are going to be presenting at that one. They are essentially going to do a compare and contrast between using the Office 365 APIs for Xamarin and Apache Cordova and demonstrate parity between the two. So we took a relatively shallow look at the Office 365 APIs in this demo. They'll kind of go through them in a little bit more detail and show how it can be used kind of using either Xamarin kind of compiled code or Cordova web code. Yes, sir. Sure. So the question was, since this is a web application, is it subject to the same exploitation like cross-site scripting hacks and the like that web apps are? So yes, it's a web app, and like any app that consumes data from the web, whether they are web apps or they are native apps, they are subject to security kind of vulnerabilities. Having said that, when you are running inside of a web view, it is under kind of a higher level of security restrictions than you are running in a browser, and so it's actually locked down quite a bit more. In fact, back over here, I'm going to try to switch over to it. In your config, under domain access, right now it just has, it's kind of hard to see, but it's just a wildcard saying that anyone can execute code in here. That essentially gives you the ability to lock it down to who is able to execute code. So there are additional restrictions that you can either, you know, relax or tighten down to your heart's content, the needs of your particular application. One more. Can you use cores or content security policy? Yes. So yes, you can use cores. In fact, for hosted apps, which is a scenario we didn't get to talk about, but hosted apps are essentially where you've got a Cordova container, but instead of packaging all of your HTML in the web view, you pull it down from a server every time. That requires quite heavy use of CSP and cores. Yep. Other questions? Yes, sir. Can you repeat a little bit louder? Oh, can you wrap a MVC web app in it? Yes, absolutely, you can. It does take work. I don't want to say it's just like, oh, put in the URL and you're done. But it is absolutely possible. In fact, we built a prototype project about 2 weeks ago on the product team doing precisely that. And I can say that it is something that we're actively considering kind of building additional tooling on top of to make it even easier when you get to Visual Studio 2015 or whatever the next release will be called. Yes, sir.
It's a project that for Ember.js
is planned. Is support for Ember.js planned? or Angular. Angular plant. So there's maybe a two-tiered answer to this. So there is already support for AngularJS today, just by virtue of like great IntelliSense inside of Visual Studio. Even better IntelliSense is planned for the near future. In fact, stay tuned in the coming weeks, and I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised by some of the stuff that we have out there. Yes, sir. What can you, so I think the question was, can you control which web view gets displayed, as in like what rendering technology it uses? That is a fantastic question. So the answer is yes, but only on Android devices today. Intel came out with a technology called Crosswalk that enables you to embed Chromium with your package, so that even if your customer, your user is running, let's call it Android 4.0, and you want them to be using Android or the latest version of Chromium, I don't know, whatever, 38 or something like that, you can embed Chromium inside of your package so that all of your users have the same version. That technology today only exists for Android. iOS and Windows, you can generally bet that they're going to be running on a very recent version. iOS 8 penetration is super high, and for Windows, it's all IE 11, you know, today. So it's near edge, if not edge. Okay, I think that we have time for one more question. All right, well, we're going to call that good. Arr! Yes, thank you all so very much. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.